This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is Philip C. It has just gone past 6 a.m. in the morning. It's a lovely Wednesday, the 20th of January. And of course, as usual, we've got some interesting stories lined up for you today. And today, by the way, is Inauguration Day in the United States. So they're going to have President Joe Biden, no more elect, you can drop the word elect.
Yay.
And he's finally moving into the White House. I do believe President ex-Trump will be on his way out. And by the way, this is a nugget of information. Apparently, he's the first president in 150 years to break tradition by not attending any inauguration celebrations.
Well, it's the day a lot of people have been waiting for. D-Day.
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 But I don't know, America is evenly divided. Bear in mind, I think 73 million people did vote for President Trump.
Yes, it was a polarizing election. And the theme for the inauguration celebration is America United.
Which makes a lot of sense because it is really quite a nation divided.
Divided. So I think that hopefully is the intent of how they will celebrate the inauguration later.
And this is something we will be talking about, right, at 6:15 in the morning. A little bit of color into what is the process like. But there's also something else, right, Philip?
Well, we're going to talk about the vice president and how we actually pronounce her name. I'm really nervous to pronounce her name. Is it Kamala Harris, Kamala Harris? Kamala Harris. So we'll have a discussion about that shortly.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. I'm very, very bad at names and I always like completely say them wrong on air and I do apologize to everyone. Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge and you want to be correct, right? You want to say it in the correct way because you don't want to, it's just rude in a way if you just like kind of mispronounce it. But anyway, do let us know what you think. Are names a challenge for you like me? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first, here's Still Sound by Toro et Moi. This is The Morning Run. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Still Sound by Toro y Moi, whose name I butchered just 2-3 minutes ago.
Immediately.
So this conversation that we're going to have in in just a few seconds is really, really so apt because it's an article in the BBC, and it's about why getting a name right matters. And let's face it, it's a very globalized world, right? All of us, you know, we've been around the world. I mean, you have, like in Malaysia, you've got, of course, the many, many races. But because we live here, we are kind of used to pronouncing each other's name, be it a Chinese name, Indian name, Malay name, you know, whether it's a like an IBAN name, we get used to it. We know how to,
correct,
you know. But sometimes I find a lot of names very challenging to say on air. You know, Russian names are my bugbear.
Oh, my goodness.
Sometimes German names are very difficult. French names, Susa. But I try. To be fair, I try and then I'll get it wrong and then I'll get this disapproving stare. So the question is, do you always get it right, Philip?
I get it wrong a lot of times. So I give you a personal story. When I was in the UK studying, my tenants were Thai.
Oh, okay. Not always easy too.
That is super hard. So their names were Jiraporn K. Sakun and Tana Pruthivarasin. Thank God, right, that the Thais actually synthesized the names to very simple names like B
Ning.
And Nikki
or Ning.
So it's like, oh, what a godsend.
Yeah, but we should make the effort, right? The point about this article is that I think in today's world, there's really no excuse. And yes, I think that it's unfair if you have a very complicated name, right? To expect everyone to know how to pronounce it. First off, I think, you know, susah. And you can, but over time, if that person is truly your friend or someone that has become like a global figure, and I think in this BBC article, they're using Kamala Harris as an example. We should all take a little bit of effort to learn how to pronounce it in the way that the person wants it pronounced.
You know, if you can't get the name right, then don't even talk about culture. Don't even talk about fashion sense, like baju kurung or so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting the name right is the first step. And you're right, getting it wrong first time is fine. Second time, but if you're getting it wrong the third time, it shows you really don't, you're not just taking the effort.
Yeah.
You're just not taking the effort at all.
And I think the person, if you're on the receiving end, you can just try and help that person. That's what I do because sometimes people are a bit confused about how to spell my name or pronounce my name. And then I just, you know, gently remind them. So it's a both way things, right? So I'm not impatient about it. I'm not irritated. I don't take offense, actually. To me, I'm like, cool, you know, not everybody will know how to pronounce my name. So it's a both way kind of communication.
Yes.
But definitely, if you're on the other end and you're saying it wrong and the person looks like, you know, you can tell the body language and all, right? I would just say, I'm sorry, I said it wrong. How should I say it? Teach me, you know, teach me how to say it. And that whole process actually is, if you ask me, the beginning of how you break some ice. And
you get to know the person better.
Yeah, and then there's a little bit of a crack of a joke and then you just move on.
And the name Kamala Harris is interesting. And there are different ways of pronouncing it. As a good student who Googled it and researched, there's actually a British pronunciation and an American pronunciation. So it can be Kamala Harris or Kamala Harris. And what is great about her is that when we mispronounce her name, she will actually correct it.
Okay, she will, yeah.
She herself will say, it's actually Kamala Harris.
Okay. So yeah, that's what you should do. If it's the pronunciation is something that you're not comfortable with, you know, then you should do it. The other thing I find very strange, somewhat related to names, is the fact that in Asia, our last name is in front, right? Our surnames are in front. So it's my name, Wong Xiao Ning.
Do you get Xiao Wong?
I get Xiao Wong, Ning Wong.
Philip Jin.
All.
Si Jin, Philip Yu.
Okay, you got all the variations
there. I got all
there.
It all.
But the best thing I ever heard, or the most honestly quite insulting thing I've ever heard, was when I was at immigration at a country, I will not tell you which country, and I was going through passport control, and the guy flips up my passport. Okay, he looks at my name. It obviously says Wong Xiao Ning, right? And he goes like, why can't you be like us? Why is your last name in the front? Can't you just put it at the back?
That's terrible.
And I was thinking, well, you could tell that to the 1.3 billion Chinese people that. But honestly, I don't think there's a right or wrong way where someone's surname is. And you just need to respect the way the name is.
You know, so how do Chinese essentially solve the problem, right? I see different ways of solving it. You have the Hong Kong version, which is you create a Christian name. And for them, they have this bombastic colonial names like Archibald Yao or Algernon Yu or whatever name. Second is you actually Anglify the name.
Okay.
So you make it into an English name, like, you know, we have Lin. So Lin becomes the name in front and at the back as well. Or third, like Indonesia, you nationalize the name and it becomes, and you hide the culture and ethnic behind it. So it's very interesting how different ways we treat names, actually.
Yeah, I think so. That is true. And maybe it also reflects the period in that time. Because if we go back in history, especially I think in the 1950s and 1940s, it was quite common for immigrants to change their names. Like if they came from Romania or from any of the Russian republics, they would kind of, and they moved to, let's say, the US or the UK, they would actually kind of make it more guailo, shall we put it that way? But I think today, today, 2021, be proud of your name, be proud of what it means, be proud for what it stands for. And if people can't get it right, help them a little bit with it. But do let
us know.
Deal with it. Do let us know whether people butcher your name, whether you've had to actually correct people, or do you mind, you don't mind.
Yeah.
WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll have some messages. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiao Ning and Philip C. It's just gone past 6:17 in the morning, Wednesday the 20th of January, and like we said earlier, today is Inauguration Day in the US. Big day for them, but of course a very different way to celebrate it because of COVID-19, you know, physical distancing is a must.
And tight security.
Very.
It looks like a war zone.
Well, there was a bit of a riot not too long ago on Capitol,
exactly.
Right? And I think any of us who saw the images were really shocked that was happening in the United States. So you're right. Apparently, Washington is in complete lockdown. There's thousands of National Guard soldiers, police everywhere. You know, of course, President Biden, his safety is a paramount concern. But this article, in the Washingtonian, have I pronounced it correctly? Another name I butchered?
Probably, but it's okay. It's okay. Go ahead. No worries.
First time. But anyway, what it does is it's a guide to Joe Biden's inauguration celebration. And of course, like I said, the event will be very different from past years. So what we do know is that a lot of it is going to be online. You know, so you can't, they're not really encouraging people to go out there, because in the past, it was a very big day. People went for parades. They watched.
No crowds.
Yeah, there were tons of crowds. Of course, but let's rewind to President Trump 4 years ago, where he claimed there were millions in the mall. And I think, of course, the TV networks were very, you know, kind of cheeky about it. They
contrasted and compared
the crowds. Tried to estimate it, and it was much fewer than what President Trump claimed.
I'm just glad that we're not going to spend time comparing size and crowds
for the moment.
For the moment, and just focus on policy after this.
Yeah, but I think this time, of course, everything moves online.
Mm. Yes.
But at the same time, I think they do want the American, the president and, of course, the committee that organizes all this, I think they still want to kind of encourage that patriotic feeling, right? And it makes a lot of sense in this current moment, especially in the country that's, like you say,
quite divided.
It's very divided. And against that backdrop where US deaths for COVID-19 have topped 400,000, that's really incredibly a sad number. So something needs to bring the country together to focus on, you know, flattening the pandemic curve, overcoming the economic crisis, a bit like us, actually a bit like every other country around the world.
Absolutely.
So maybe this presidential inauguration is that moment. But what do you think is so unusual about it this time, Philip?
Well, a couple of things are unusual. Firstly, let's look at the RSVP list. Okay, so most of the presidents will be there, except the incumbent.
Oh, which breaks with 150 years of tradition, but never mind.
Yeah, and he's basically going to fly off about 4 hours before the inauguration. So that's one big change. Second is the crowds won't be there. But if you're a keen follower of social media, you probably have seen that they've been replaced by 191,500 flags.
Okay.
And the pictures look amazing. So it is pretty awe-inspiring to just see that sea of flags. And in that podium where he gets inaugurated, only 100 people will be in attendance. As you said just now, there are no parades. But there will be a light show in honor of the COVID victims. And also in the evening, there's a kind of virtual programming hosted by Tom Hanks.
Mm.
And I think this will be the first time where it will be replaced by balls and galas. So I think Joe Biden probably will have a pajama party in the White House in celebration. And that's the kind of inauguration party I wouldn't mind having if I became president one day. A pajama party at night.
But, you know, I think the point about all this is that, you know, how then do we, you know, which begs the question, how do we do these events in this new normal, in this COVID-19 era, right? And I think everything is doable. But you have to kind of change the way you think about it. And in many ways, right, for most Americans, they would have watched it on television anyway. Not like everybody rushes to Washington, D.C. to catch the event live. But maybe a bit of that atmosphere, nonetheless, is a bit lost, right?
The crowds,
how do you kind of get that rah-rah thing going?
It's a very tough call because having lived in the U.K., the pomp and pageantry with these really iconic events actually comes with the crowd, you know, side by side, at the edges, and it just electrifies the whole place. So how will they translate that energy and electricity onto the screen will be a very tough challenge,
I think there will be going forward how the president is going to communicate with the American public, right? Because everything is going to be very much televised, with, you know, versus like actual rallies, actual meetings with the public, right? Because you can't do that. It's not encouraged with this until... I suppose until herd immunity is achieved.
He tried to do that. And during his campaign, he first was considered Sleepy Joe because he was hiding in a bunker.
That's what Trump used to say, right?
Yeah. And then he tried to go and do these rail trips.
He also did the car rallies
where people parked in cars and honked. It still didn't really have that effect of large crowds. So I think it's a work in progress to try and convey the energy still without those large crowds. Because the large crowds, the collective presence of people, does embolden people further. And I just still think it's going to be a challenge.
I'm just curious. I'm going to bring this back home. I mean, at the moment, of course, you know, we're in a state of emergency. So, you know, a political kind of just a kind of a break. But elections will happen eventually, right? I mean, the deadline for it from a constitutional law perspective is, I think, 2023. Assuming we don't achieve herd immunity and what do we do? How do Turamas change? That's the big thing, right?
Good point. It's interesting in Malaysia, when you see how election campaign happen, some people do really good ceramahs.
And a physical
ceramahs where there's big crowds at open padangs. But I also see there are very effective small group sessions taking place.
Yeah.
Right? At the Pangsapuri just below. And those tend to be, in my view, very effective because you are basically going to the rakyat, you are basically polling them, and you don't need large crowds to be effective there.
But how do you maintain that physical distancing and
that's
keeping
that's
it
be
safe
challenge.
In the COVID-19 era? I think everybody's going to be watching that. But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Rocket Man by Elton John. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. This is Shaoning and I'm here with Philip on The Morning Run. And that was Are You In by Incubus. Maybe a question they need to ask Joe Biden because he's almost in, yep. by the way. Almost. Because they are a few hours behind
yes,
us.
12 hours, I think.
But in the meantime, we are looking at some of the international stories, of interest. And first off, of course, is the US. And we do know that Janet Yellen, the US president-elect, well, I think we can drop the word elect, yeah. Joe Biden's nominee for Secretary of State.
Treasury Secretary?
Yeah, sorry, you're right, Treasury Secretary, will tell the Senate Finance Committee that the government must act big with the next coronavirus relief package. And this is after Biden outlined a $1.9 trillion stimulus package proposal last week, saying bold investment was needed to jumpstart the economy and accelerate the distribution of vaccines because she believes that the benefits of going big at this time will far outweigh the cost. And I wanted to rewind a little bit. Remember they ding-donged over during the Christmas period over what was a relatively small package, much smaller than this.
That's right.
But I think the big difference this time is we've got a new president. And we've got a president who's in control of both houses, a first in a long time, in fact. So maybe perhaps his efforts to kind of restart the economy will bear some fruit or will at least get the green light from the lawmakers.
Yeah, this $1.9 trillion stimulus package is unprecedented. I think it really reflects what Janet is saying, go big or go home, seriously. One of the big changes, of course, is that stimulus payment check. That's a top-up of $1,400 on top of the current $600 check approved. And that was the contentious approval last time, which really divided Republicans. Because some Republicans were in favor of the $2,000 check, whereas some were not. And so in the end, they just went for the $600. But Biden this time decided, okay, I'm just going to go for broke and go in with the incremental $1,400. But in addition to that, he's really putting a lot more money into vaccinations, and also a lot of bold initiatives. For example, introducing a $15 minimum wage at the federal level. That's really unprecedented in my view.
I think he is a president that is, I think, keenly aware of the huge divide in an American society, right? And the divide, of course, the inequality, COVID-19 has made it far worse. And it's the same case here in Malaysia, right? So those who are the B40s who are, sadly unemployed, who have had their pay cut because of the various versions of MCO, like even now MCO 2.0, I think they really feel the brunt of it. So you're almost seeing, I think, a kind of a K society. We talk about it as in a K economy.
Yep.
But there is a K society. So those who do really, really well,
those who benefit and those who proportionally are not.
Yeah. So he needs to address this situation, right? Because already America as it is, from a political perspective, is very divided. What more from an economic perspective?
So the solutions have to be targeted. And actually, the feedback we're hearing from a lot of economists is that a lot of support for the package, that it's actually thoughtful, very targeted.
Hmm.
But nevertheless, the expectation is that 1.8 or 1.9 trillion will probably be trimmed down to about 0.8 to 1.1 trillion, about half that number. That's the forecast and expectation.
My other question I have for the Biden administration is, will they relook at their healthcare system? Because COVID-19 has really paid attention to the fact that there are many flaws within it, one of which is, of course, they've had many contentious issues over the National Health Insurance Scheme. Who is covered? How should it be covered? Do you pay? Don't pay? I think, when Obama came into power, he enacted some healthcare insurance. Trump took that away and then you keep getting, left and right. And there's no universal healthcare system unlike Malaysia. We laugh. We always say, okay, we don't have a healthcare system. We do. It's a little bit at breaking point, unfortunately, now because of COVID-19, but we do. And I think those countries which have universal healthcare systems have somewhat, kind of overcome the COVID-19 crisis a little bit better. I think in America, it's complicated by the fact that there's a federal level, then there's a state level. And now, even when it comes to vaccination, that disparity or that, you know, where you've got federal and state confuses things rather than a nationalistic one, which can, you know, like a rollout of vaccination program, even like in the UK, because they have NHS, right? So they've been very aggressive, but question marks in US. So I think Biden has
huge
issues facing him. It's not going to be easy. I think for him, if I was coming to power, my main question is, how can I, you know, it sounds a bit corny, but it's true. How do I heal this very divided nation to work together? You
he's
know?
Got to assemble a great team. And from what we've seen, he's built a very diverse team so far. And in the coming weeks, Senate will be confirming all his nominations, hopefully.
Hopefully. And, you know, they don't take, you know, basically take politics. Well,
they don't drag their feet and apply politics. And
exactly.
The partisan
because,
line.
But, you know, as usual, that is something we see everywhere around the world, right? Just not just in America. But very quickly moving on to a neighbor down south, Indonesia. They are also rolling out their vaccination program. And here, they are prioritizing healthcare and public service workers in its drive, which I think is absolutely fair. You know, it's the right thing to do. But they are also giving preference to social media influencers. That's a bit unusual. And their argument for that is that it will broadcast the vaccination to millions of social media followers and then help persuade a skeptical public. I mean, do you think it's a good idea, Philip?
It comes back to what is Indonesia's vaccination strategy. And what we've heard is that Indonesia is taking a very different approach. Whereas other countries are targeting the older,
the vulnerable
communities, they're saying, no, we shouldn't prioritize that yet. We should prioritize the economic, younger, active, because they are more mobile, they're moving around.
And so, they're spreading COVID-19.
So that's the different approach they're taking in Indonesia. And as a result of that, how do you get this young mobile workforce engaged and interested to do the vaccine? And I think social media influencers are probably that pathway to attract people. So I think that's why you're getting a lot of brickbats. But I do see the logic behind this.
Well, I would like to remind everybody that Elvis had, if I'm not wrong, one vaccination on Ed Sullivan's show in the 1950s. Mm. So using stars is not unusual. And in today, social media stars are the new stars. But give us your thoughts. Let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Wong Xiaoning with Philip C. And this is The Morning Run. And that was I Only Want to Be With You by Dusty Springfield. It is currently now 6:50 in the morning, Wednesday, the 20th of January. And of course, we're taking a look at the daily newspapers. And in front of me, I've got the H Morning Brief. And it's quite a somber read for what is typically a business paper because it's really centered on COVID-19. Mm. And I think this one is something that we all need to be reminded and we need to confront this and accept that this is sadly might be the truth. And that is our MOH. The Ministry of Health said today that the daily new COVID-19 cases may reach up to 8,000 by the third week of March, if the infectivity rate of the coronavirus in the country is not brought under control. Because yesterday we had 3,631 new infections and the country's R0 value still stands at 1.2.
You know, Xiaoning, do you not see the difference between MCO1 and MCO2? In MCO1, for me, COVID was some lurking disease where you really don't experience or see it because the infectivity and the number of cases are so low. But I find this time in MCO2, I'm actually knowing friends and people who actually have COVID.
Yeah, it's no longer someone, you know. Yeah. It's immediate. That's within your circle, right?
And yesterday, one of my relatives of another relative, he passed away due to COVID. I find this COVID rise of cases actually hitting home much closer than it was in MCO1.
Yes, because sadly, the death rate is also increased, right? Mm. As of yesterday, sadly, 619 people have passed away from COVID-19. Our total infection rate as a country is 165,371. You know, our recovery rate is also good. It's 125,288. But the point about all these figures is that, you know, even though the vaccine is here, we can't let our guard down.
Yeah,
you have to. We've already been told, right, that the herd immunity that we hope to achieve is not going to happen till at least next year at best, right? So we really need to kind of maintain our SOPs. And yes, I would say there is a bit of fatigue. We're all very tired. We're almost coming up to 1 year where we had Malaysia's first infection of COVID-19. But sadly, this is a bit of a war that we all have to kind of hunker down and get over it. And as much as you like it, you know, you still need to keep that physical distancing. You need to wear your mask, wash your hands constantly. Because otherwise, if we don't bring our R0 number down very quickly, we are going to have severe implications on our healthcare system. And we are already at breaking point.
Yeah. I think just moving on to the other papers, on the Malaysian Reserve, I just wanted to highlight a couple of very interesting numbers. So the first number we see is 600 million. And that's the daily MCO 2.0 cost that Tengku Zafrul, our Minister of Finance, has mentioned. It's much lower compared to MCO 1, which was estimated at about 2.4 billion. So the cost is about 25% of what it was in MCO 1. And the reason why it's much lower, the cost, is that five essential sectors are still open. Small and medium enterprises such as stalls and stores can be opened. And linking that to another story in which actually the government is now considering 8 p.m. closing for businesses, which was talked quite a bit yesterday. Discussion about whether or not we should extend the closing date beyond 8 p.m.
Yeah, I think there are lots of people who work beyond 8 p.m. or work, you know, basically they finish work at 8, right? And what do we do for them? Where are they supposed to go in terms of getting food, for example?
That's right.
So I think it's critical. Now, the other interesting news I have is, of course, MPC meeting, right, later today, after lunch. I'm not sure, maybe before lunch or after lunch, where do you think Bank Negara will actually be cutting the overnight policy rate from 1.75%? And that will probably give us an indication of how bad or how good our economy is and whether the recent announced PERMI stimulus package is enough. But if you look at the details of the PERMI, I think there are question marks about how much really is there real new spend. Some of it are old initiatives, old measures that were announced under previous the budget 2021. So I think all eyes on that. Definitely we'll be covering it tomorrow morning, but I know my colleagues on the evening edition will be discussing the outcome of that. So do tune in later on.
I must say, prior to the PERMI announcement, there was a split consensus whether the rate was going to be cut. But recently, I think after the PERMI announcement, you see a slight bias to say, yes, rates will eventually be cut, likely March or the following meetings, but unlikely this coming one. So, but the question again begs to, how effective is PERMI? How substantive is that stimulus to be able to give Bank Negara the fiscal decision to decide whether to cut rate or not?
Yeah, because you do need to maintain some level of dry powder if the economy really goes through another downturn, right? Because I think what COVID-19 has taught us that we will have this constant cycle until we achieve herd immunity, unfortunately, of opening and closing economies. Maybe not like what we are facing, because yesterday Ismail Sabri basically said MCO has been extended nationwide except for Sarawak, right?
Yes.
So you do see like open, close, and that's the only way to combat COVID-19, right? You find a cluster, you kind of break it down, you try and avoid infection spreading beyond a certain community. So this is the new norm, right? The other thing that I like to highlight is today schools actually restart.
And I see in the front page of the Star a bit of concern as students get nervous, especially for SPM students taking the exams this time round.
Yeah, because of course many students are going to go online. I understand for my nephew that he's online for 2 hours a day. But kudos to parents who are struggling with work and who are also trying very hard to...
Ball ginseng. Keep alert.
Keep ginseng. Alert. Well, tough times ahead for all these parents. But that's all we have for you at this moment. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Jack Kuzi to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's Rat Race by The Specials. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.